My guest today is Michael Cordeloni, who attended the Cleveland Institute of Art at the age of 4 until he began drumming at the age of 9. Now, he completely threw himself into drumming, playing his first professional gig at a bar at the age of 11, although he never stopped painting. Now, Michael continued studying both drumming and painting simultaneously throughout his grade school and high school years, and by the time he graduated high school, Michael was performing 4 nights a week, earning a living as a musician, yet at the same time, he had begun selling his paintings. Then in his early 20s, he found himself in a new band called Damn Yankees, which, well, we all know, went on to multi-platinum status. Other recording and or touring credits include John Fogerty and Cher, Peter Frampton and Freddie Mercury, and in 1998, Michael joined the legendary Southern rock band Lynyrd Skynyrd, where he can currently be seen on tour throughout the world. Now, Michael Cordeloni's paintings have earned the honor of being included among the fine collections of the Chaplin family, Peter Frampton, Russell Brand, and the Hard Rock Cafe, and are on display for sale at Wentworth Galleries nationwide. So, ladies and gentlemen, let's welcome artist by day, drummer by night, the multi-talented Michael Cordeloni to the show. Welcome, Michael.
Hello, Ward. Thank you.
Well, which came first, painting or drumming?
Chicken or the egg? The painting was first. The quick story, the kindergarten teacher had seen my interest in drawing and painting and mentioned it to my parents that they might want to encourage that. So the summer in between kindergarten and first grade, my parents enrolled me at an art class at the Cleveland, Ohio, that's where I'm from, the Cleveland Institute of Art. And I spent that whole summer being taught all of the proper art theory, which immediately went over my head, being 4 years old. I would like to think some of it somehow stayed in there. Perhaps I'm still making use of that today. So 4 years old, painting, drumming at 9. And the two have then coexisted my entire life. They have been two perfect halves of a whole.
You know, you're 4 years old. You're sitting at the Cleveland Institute of Art. How old was everybody else around you?
Older than 4. I would say the next youngest would have been maybe a high school person. And then a lot of young adults and a lot of adult adults. I will tell you, Ward, I actually have a painting from that summer still. And it is the Mr. Peanut Man, you know, with the monocle and the top hat and the cane. And it's actually not bad for a 4-year-old.
Well, you know, I think it's so great when, even if it's a kindergarten teacher, notices talent in youngsters that, hey, they may actually have something. Did you fall in love with painting at the age of 4, or did the true love of painting come when you were older?
I would say in that kindergarten class, it cemented itself then. And the fascination has never gone away. I would like to think the technique has gotten better, but I'll let everyone else judge that.
Well, you started playing drums, like you had said, at the age of 9. Did that ever distract you from your painting?
No, because I've been able to change the hats instantaneously. You know, it's very hard, Ward, for me to separate the two because they are so interconnected. They're two different forms of creative expression, but at least for me, they balance each other. They enhance each other. Quite often I'm doing one and thinking about the other. And I would say on any given day, I'm a drummer who's painting or I'm a painter who's drumming. It kind of depends when you find me.
And one stick has a brush at the end and the other one is hitting a drum head.
Truly. truly, the two halves of my life are quiet and introspective and loud and public.
Well, have you ever been in the middle of, let's say, a drumming session? Maybe it's in a studio, or maybe you're on stage in a stadium playing to tens of thousands of people, and then some thought of painting come into your mind during that?
More often than I should admit. I will tell you, at one point I was doing a painting that was my vantage point from behind the drums. And I was carrying that canvas on tour with Lynyrd Skynyrd because we have a lot of time during the day, so I would paint in the hotel rooms. And so that painting was back in the hotel room, and we're in the middle of the show, and I find myself looking down thinking, oh, I missed that one bolt. I have to paint that bolt. Oh, that's right. We're so, yeah, you know, when I get really focused in the middle of a painting, it's hard for me to turn it off. I will tell you that I am sitting in my apartment in New York City. There is a painting on the easel in the other room that is almost finished, and it is it's for the show that we are going to be talking about. But you know, tomorrow morning I will be on a plane flying to the next town that Skynyrd is performing. And I will be looking at photographs on my phone of the painting in the other room, thinking, oh, you know what? I missed the leaf on that tree right there.
So you actually make notes, because I know that a lot of people don't do a painting all in one sitting. They kind of go back and forth to it. So you actually make, what is it, mental notes? Or do you actually write them down to remind you to go back and either touch something up, or maybe you want to add color or a texture to something?
It's a little of all of the above. I may walk into the room the next morning and see something that I missed, but have to head to the airport. So I'll just take a little piece of tape and make an arrow and tape it right onto the canvas, like, do this when you get back.
Well, with you...
Yeah, and then I'll be looking at my phone, and I'll see something that my eye didn't see, but the camera on the phone caught. It's a very good tool, having this technology, I'll tell you that.
Wow. I have to ask, because you have toured with some of the greats. Of course, you know, you're known as the drummer for not only Lynyrd Skynyrd, but also Damn Yankees. Has there ever been a time in the midst of your career where you're on tour and then all of a sudden this huge burst of inspiration hit you and you're like, oh, I need to paint that? Or maybe it was during the day. Maybe it was before sound check. You went sightseeing and then something just appeared before you. Is there something that really sticks out into your mind right now?
It happens all the time. And on my phone, there is a list of ideas that just keeps getting longer and longer. And I don't know if I will live long enough to bring them all to fruition. But as soon as an idea presents itself, and I never know when they're going to, it could be a color that triggers an idea. I love just walking around whatever given town I'm in, and I just keep my eyes open because I never know where the gifts will present themselves.
Now, what did it feel like for you to have your very first gallery showing in your early 20s?
It was pretty great. You know, I had, let me think. I was in third grade. And I had done all of these Disney characters, and my school hung them up in the library. So maybe that was my first exhibit, now that I think. I didn't sell any of those. But, you know, once the art started to sell and the gallery exhibitions began, it was a real sense of accomplishment, feeling like I was able to kind of take it, you know, out of the inner circle beyond my family and friends that had only seen it. Just like with the music, you know, you express what you need to express and you release it to the world, and you hope that someone smiles when they see it.
Well, what was the first painting that you ever sold?
That's a good question. It's not the Mr. Peanut, I'll tell you that. It was a landscape that a friend had asked me if I would do for his parents as a gift. And it was a fall scene with a lot of great colors and, you know, a very kind of calming, curvy road disappearing in the distance. And Bob Ross would have been proud if he had seen it. God bless him.
Well, when you do paint, do you like to paint in silence? Do you paint with headphones on, or do you have music playing? What kind of moves your soul or your spirit when you're painting?
All of the above. There are times when I need complete silence to concentrate, and then there are times when I need music to distract me. Because there are times when I'll be working on something that's so specific and so detailed that it starts to get a little hard mentally and physically on my hand, on my eyes, and music actually helps me to kind of escape that. And then it just takes over and I'm painting and not even thinking about it. Every now and then I actually will paint talking on the phone with someone. It really comes down to the subject matter, which determines what the outer stimulus needs to be or not to be. That is the question.
There you go. Well, I was going to ask you, so what are some of your favorite visuals to paint? Is it people, objects, landscapes?
You know, I'm happy to say that I've almost gone out of my way to not have one subject or one style. And I know that may not be the best idea long term. Because it's wonderful to, you know, see an Andy Warhol painting and know it's Andy Warhol instantly. But I've enjoyed not giving myself parameters and just whatever I feel is what I paint next. And I think the through line, Ward, is that you can see it's the same hand that painted it. You see some of the same styling and some of the same techniques. And even if it's a landscape, which by the way is what's on the easel in the other room, or it's a photorealistic, you know, portrait, you see the same person did the work.
That makes sense. I was highly impressed. You have a brand new piece called Four David Cubed, which I loved because it distinctively shows off four very different particular styles in one painting. What was the inspiration behind the idea for this particular piece of art?
Well, thank you for bringing up the Four Davids. I am immensely proud of those. My wife, Nancy, and I went to Italy on our honeymoon, and we went to Florence, and we went to see the David. Have you seen the David?
No, I have not.
Put that on your list. So to see the David for the first time is a pretty powerful experience. First of all, the thing's huge. And you have no idea that you're going to turn the corner and see something on top of a pedestal that's about 18 feet tall. Yeah, it's just unbelievable. I had already been a Michelangelo fan, But seeing that statue was just unbelievable. And I found myself thinking, you know, I need to paint that in tribute. So it took me quite a while, and I started coming up with different ways to paint the David, but I couldn't come up with just one that I was happy with. But I came up with four that I was happy with. And the idea then turned into almost a double homage. So to Michelangelo and the David. But then I thought, what if I paint him in four different styles, representing four different eras of art, and those eras I would choose an instantly recognizable artist to use as the reference point. So it covers a 100-year span of art history, because it begins with Van Gogh, which is in 1889. Then it moves to Picasso, Roy Lichtenstein, and Andy Warhol. So you have 1889 to 1984. And what I did was I would find a painting from the aforementioned that I liked. Let's use the Van Gogh, for example. So Van Gogh had painted 27, I think, self-portraits. And I chose one that I really liked. It's a very instantly recognizable Van Gogh portrait. And in essence, what I did was I removed Van Gogh from the painting and I put David in place in the exact position that Van Gogh would have placed himself. And then I painted it exactly as Van Gogh painted himself. In essence, if Van Gogh ever painted the David, it would look like this. If Picasso ever painted him, it would look like this, and so on and so on. So what I did, because I am not a spontaneous painter in any way, I am a reference material study plan to a fault before I even pick up a paintbrush. I do not leave anything to chance. It's just not the way I work.
Well, I loved. And, yeah, I noticed. Yeah. Within the four Davids, I picked up the Picasso and I picked up the Andy Warhol. But I kept staring at all four and I'm like, this is genius.
Wow. That's a big word. Thank you. Thank you, Ward.
Because it showcased four elements of your talent, which of course with painting, there's far more than four, but this paint, you know, whoever buys this at the gallery is going to have one exciting piece.
Well, I should tell you that, first of all, that was an incredible compliment. Thank you. I painted the four Davids several years ago, and those paintings they're four individual paintings. Each one is 4 feet by 4 feet. So when you put all four on the wall, it's a monstrous wall. Those original paintings were sold several years ago, and I am proud to say they are in South Beach, Miami penthouse. They live together on this wall in an apartment that used to be owned by Pharrell Williams. So it's a very elaborate three-story penthouse in South Beach, Miami. And I was able to actually go there and meet the couple and stand in the place and look up at the wall and see my work hanging there, which was really amazing because I've never been able to do that. I never have been able to go see my work where its home ended up. So what will be at the show May 25th in Asheville, North Carolina, at the Philip DeAngelo Studio, the four Davids will be represented there. What will be there are four canvas Giclée reproductions, and they will hang on the wall, four separate pieces, just like the original huge four canvases hang on the wall. That was an amazing time, because it was a full year, if not longer. The Van Gogh one took me 7 months to paint. That would be, when you look at them next, the top left corner. It's the one with all the blue and green swirls, which is the trademark Van Gogh look. That was a really hard painting. But what was fascinating about this whole process was I had to learn four different painting styles. So I was starting from scratch and then trying to figure out how to emulate the next great artist. And again, with the research, nothing was left to chance. I made sure to go to galleries and see works from every one of those paintings, the painters in person, to get up as close as I could without being thrown out by the security, to see what the strokes look like and what the colors looked like. And then, of course, in some cases, there's video that you can see an artist at work. So I really made sure to, as best I could, try and become that person while I was working on that painting. And it was fascinating, because with each next David, I was getting a bigger vocabulary as a painter. And collectively, all of that knowledge I still use, depending on what I'm working on.
Well, what are some of your favorite art galleries around the world?
Well, I live in New York City, so I'm very fortunate to have some great ones here. MoMA and the Metropolitan both have paintings from all of those four. I love the Art Institute Chicago. In Italy, of course, you know, name a city. there's an incredible gallery everywhere, museum everywhere. That's one of the great things about my night job, with all the travel that we do, is that I get to pop into a town and then open up my phone and find out where the nearest art museum or art gallery is. And then I'll even go to the extreme of, I'm on the website for the museum and I'll type in, do they have a Caravaggio? No, go to the next museum. Do they have a Van Gogh? No, go to the next museum. And once I find these places, they become part of the next visit to that town.
Wow. Now you have a new painting, Bronte. What was the inspiration behind this work? Was it something that you saw while on vacation or on tour?
Thank you for bringing that up. That is a very personal painting. I am Sicilian, although I'm born here in the States. But my grandparents are from a town in Sicily called Bronta, which is the pronunciation of that. And so my wife and I have gone down to visit family a few different times. And on one of the trips there, I happened to walk by that scene. And I took a photo of it and came home and painted it.
Now, do you have any works that you've done that you didn't want to sell, that once you paint it, you're like, I'm keeping this one?
Yes. There is one here in the apartment. It's hanging up in the living room. And it is a painting called New York. This is a kind of a sepia tone period piece. It's New York in the early 1900s. It's just one street, basically, with a lot of buildings and billboards and old vehicles and people walking about. And in the foreground, there are three men sitting on a park bench. And these are my three heroes. And those three men are Charlie Chaplin, Harry Houdini, and then sitting in between them, my father. And I wanted to do a painting of my dad. And I thought, well, this would be a really fun way to do this, is to have him kind of share a moment with Chaplin and Houdini. And they're sitting on this park bench and they're sharing a big laugh. And that painting took many years to complete because it's very, very detailed. But I couldn't sell that because it was my dad. So the original is here at home, but I did make canvas reproductions of it, which have been marketed for several years now. And I will tell you, when my father, rest in peace, first saw this, I hadn't even started painting it yet, but I had drawn in a very detailed way the entire work on the canvas. Again, I don't leave anything to chance. So, but the pencil drawing, you could clearly see the faces, even with a simple line drawing. And my dad walked into the room and he walked up to it, and I was just waiting for the light bulb, and I saw him looking, and he looked down and he went, is this supposed to? It was a great moment.
Wow.
And when it was finished, I have a wonderful photo of him standing next to it. And there was a great moment at a gallery show. Someone had purchased a reproduction of that painting, and my parents were at the show. And I introduced this man who bought the painting. I said, "This is my father. He's, you know," and we spun it around, and my dad signed it on the back. That's a pretty cool keepsake that person has.
Very, very much so. And I know that with artists, regardless if they're painters, if they're musicians, for you, and this, at first I thought it was going to be an odd question, but I don't think it is. Because you live in New York. When 9/11 happened, did you take the moment? Did you take your emotions and put them to canvas right after that? And if you did, what did you paint?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question. I did not do that. The day 9/11 happened, I was sitting in a hotel room in, I believe it was Raleigh, I think. We were in the middle of a Skinner tour. And, you know, I didn't get back home for a couple months at that point. So I did not do that. I kind of feel like I should now, though. I don't know what I would paint. I will tell you that the band had the very good fortune of becoming friends with some people in the FBI, you know, like most rock bands do. Friends in the FBI. And they took us into Ground Zero. This was, I guess it was December. Right. So it's a few months after 9/11 happens. And they were still clearing stuff away. You know, the two, you know, spire that were, those were still there sticking up. It was smoking because of the smoldering that was going on for months and months. It was incredibly surreal and powerful to go down there. And just such a tragic day in our history.
I was just wondering, and you mentioned Raleigh, North Carolina. There is an art gallery in Columbia, South Carolina. Gosh, I'm trying to figure out how long it's been. I know that it was before the pandemic. We were there. We actually stayed in Columbia because, I think it was during Memorial Day weekend or Labor Day weekend when NASCAR was running Darlington. But we stayed in Columbia, which was like 75 miles away from the racetrack. And we're like, what are we going to do? So we found out that this art gallery was doing a showing of Andy Warhol's work.
Oh, nice. And
of all any city that you could have chosen in America, but to have an Andy Warhol exhibit in Columbia, South Carolina was like the coolest thing ever. And we're like, oh, we're going to go see that.
Yeah. Here's a recommendation. If you ever travel to Pittsburgh, the Andy Warhol Museum is right in downtown. It's right by the baseball stadium. And it's incredible.
I'm going to have to check that out. And, you know, you mentioned the Chicago Art Institute. That is an incredible museum. Well, I've been there. It is wonderful. I mean, you could literally spend a day or two and may not even see all the paintings.
Yeah. So I don't know if you are a fan of Seurat, but the original Sunday on Le Grand Jatte is there, you know, the painting. Yeah. So Seurat is one of my favorite painters. And much like the Davids, I did a tribute homage to him and to that painting. And what I did was, much like the Davids, I did the double homage treatment. So I took Rodin's Thinker and I took Sunday on Le Grand Jatte and I pulled everybody out of the Seurat painting, the monkey, the lady with the umbrella, everybody I pulled out. And then I put the Thinker just sitting on a little stump right in the middle of the park and combined the two. And that painting, that the original painting, will be at the show in Asheville. But to give you the, you know, backstory on leaving nothing to chance, I've been to the Chicago Art Institute 3 or 4 times, studying specifically that painting. I've been to the Rodin Museum in Philadelphia, studying the statue. And then, thank you, nighttime job, when the band was on tour in Paris, I went to Le Grand Jatte, the island, and they have a plaque. And the plaque says, this is where Seurat set up his easel. And I read the plaque and then I looked up and there was the scenery. I was literally standing where he stood. So I was able to actually experience the location that he used. So pretty lucky that I've been able to do these things for my nice little second career I have going.
Well, with your ancestry being from Sicily, have you ever been to Sicily to paint?
No, I, you know, when we've gone down there, we're just visiting family. But I will tell you, there are in this show in Asheville, there are, I think, 10 Italian and or Sicilian paintings. And they're all directly from places that I stood in and experienced in person, including the one that's on the easel that I'd love to tell you about, because it's a really cool, I think, story that ties in this art show. So May 25th, Saturday, I'm doing my first ever art show in Asheville, which is a really hip arts town. And they have this area called the River Arts District. It has, I can't even tell you. I went into at least 25 galleries the day that I first experienced it. And I know there's hundreds of artists down there. But this one particular gallery was called Philip D'Angelo Studio. And I really liked the work that Philip had hanging on the walls that he had done. And I really loved the vibe of his gallery. So I just called him out of the blue and I introduced myself. And we just kind of hit it off on the phone. And we discovered that we both had Sicilian ancestry. So we thought, well, wouldn't that be a fascinating, you know, springboard to do a joint show together? We have this shared history. We both love painting those themes. So we came up with this idea to do this show. It's called Bella Italia, beautiful Italy. And it's really going to be a fun event because Phil and I have different styles. The way we paint, but they definitely enhance each other and complement. And what we thought we would do to tie our two worlds together, we came up with one subject, and it is in a town called Taormina, Sicily, and it is a if you've traveled there, it's instantly identifiable and recognizable because it's a very popular destination. It's this beautiful, crumbly old Greek ruins amphitheater. It was built in 300 AD, and now it's just miraculously standing, but it's very, you know, broken down, but it's gorgeous. So I had, with my wife, Nancy, visited this theater, and she took a photo of me actually standing on what was the stage, and that's one of the photos I'm using for reference. But Phil and I decided we were both going to paint this Greek theater, and he's going to do it his style, and I'm going to do it my style. We haven't shared with each other the vantage point. Because we kind of want to surprise each other at the very last minute. But those two paintings will hang side by side right in the middle of the gallery as the kind of the cornerstone of the show and where our two worlds meet. And mine is almost done. It has been a very busy March and now April touring with Skynyrd. And I'm home for one day and then gone and 2 days and then gone. But I'm sitting at that easel as much as I can. I was sitting at that easel all day until I had to stop and, you know, set up the lighting here in the room for this. But I will be going back in there when we're done.
Well, I love that idea that both of you gentlemen are painting this Colosseum from your perspective, your point of view, and in your own style. That's going to be a great reveal for all those who attend, and it's going to be a great reveal for you and Philip to see each other's work and to see what you came up with.
I'm looking forward to this moment. I think we both have a vision of what the other one's going to look like because we can picture the way they paint, each other paints. But yeah, it's still, the element of surprise is going to be wonderful.
Well, I have to ask because I can't leave without asking. So how did the whole damn Yankees gig happen?
Thank you for bringing up Damn Yankees. I am incredibly proud of that band and what we were able to do. I actually just had a text from Ted Nugent this morning. We've all kept in touch over the years. I was playing in Tommy Shaw's solo band. So Tommy Shaw was one of the members of Damn Yankees. And of course, Tommy became known from the band Styx. And at one point, Tommy had a solo band and he had stepped away from Styx for a handful of years. And it was simply just because I was playing in Tommy's solo band that I was kind of conveniently already nearby. And a record company executive named John Kalander from Los Angeles had suggested to Tommy's manager and Ted's manager that maybe the two of them should meet and see if there was any chemistry and they should try and write some songs. And so Tommy called me and he said, hey, I need you to come into our rehearsal room because Ted Nugent's going to fly into town and he and I are going to just kind of, you know, jam and see if we can come up with any ideas. And I said, okay, yeah, that'll be fun. And I hung up the phone and I thought, yeah, this is never going to work. But it did. And very quickly after that, Jack Blades, the bass player from Night Ranger, got involved, and Jack became the perfect balance between Ted and Tommy, stylistically. And that was such a wonderful experience. And that band went on to do very well, and it was the first real national released album I had ever been on, and it did wonderfully well. And we had a 5-year, very fun, very concentrated work-wise period where we did 2 albums and toured constantly. And we've remained close friends all these years. The band, interestingly, never broke up, just kind of went on a self-imposed hiatus that hasn't been lifted. Because I do get asked. We all get asked.
Oh, I bet you do.
Yeah. And in this wacky music business, never say never. So who knows?
Well, I know one thing. If it ever happens with all of you getting back together to do a concert or an album, everybody will be waiting in line to either buy the ticket or the album. And my gosh, I mean, back in the day, Damn Yankees was really fit the bill that when they always threw around the term supergroup, Damn Yankees really was a supergroup.
Well, 3/4 of it was. The drummer was some unknown kid from Cleveland who was really happy to be there.
Well, who are some of your most favorite artists that you've ever worked with?
Oh, well, certainly Damn Yankees and Skynyrd I have to put at the top of the list, but I've had some wonderful experiences. I did a full year touring, and I've done some recording as well with John Fogerty, and he was an absolute pleasure to work with. What an incredible talent he is. I've done some recording with Peter Frampton, which was wonderful. He's a good buddy. And then I've done some things that would surprise people. I'm on a Cher record that was really fun. I played on a Freddie Mercury record that was released after he passed away. But what they did was they took some songs that Freddie had started to record and not finished. And then we went into the studio and we basically finished them. So I was the beginning of that process. So I was literally just sitting in an empty recording studio wearing headphones, listening to Freddie play piano and sing. And then I just kind of played along with it, which was kind of otherworldly.
Well, for you, I mean, what is it like to have your paintings being included in such incredible collections like the Chaplin family, of course, your friend Peter Frampton, and even Russell Branham, of course, the Hard Rock Cafe?
It's incredibly satisfying. There's a feeling of accomplishment, certainly. The Hard Rock alone have bought, it's got to be 4 or 5 of my original paintings. The Chaplin family, that's tied in, of course, with my fascination of Chaplin. And I've done some Chaplin paintings that the family has kind of done their official, tip of the hat for, and they've helped me market things. And one of those Chaplin paintings, actually, Russell Brand has. And he called me. I really wish I had gotten that phone call instead of the voicemail. But he went on to say that, you know, he was a huge Chaplin fan and how much he loved the painting and how he was going to hang it on the ceiling of his bedroom. So it would be the first thing he would see every day and the last thing he would see every night.
That sounds like Russell Brand.
Yeah.
That
painting, if I can tell you very quickly.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, that painting, it's of Charlie as the tramp in the you know, the hat and the mustache. And unlike in the New York painting, he's in his street clothes. So unless you know what Charlie Chaplin looks like, he's just a guy sitting next to my dad laughing. Anyway, the Chaplin painting that Russell Brand has, it's Charlie as we've seen him on screen in black and white. And the edge of the canvas has the film sprockets. So it looks like a piece of, like a frame of movie film. And it has this kind of soft focus, black and white, dreamy quality, like those old black and white films look. But then I wanted the eyes to be photorealistic and full color, so they just riveted. So I asked Charlie's daughter, Josephine, you know, by this time I already had friendships with the family, because I knew that Charlie had blue eyes, and not a lot of people know that. So I found this website that made glass mannequin eyes, and I sent Josephine a page online that had all of the blue eyes listed. And she said, it's that one. So I bought that glass eye, and much to my wife's dismay, because I still have it, and it is kind of freaky just seeing this thing laying around. But as I was working on that painting, I was just holding this glass eye to make it truly photorealistic.
And truly authentic down to the very color. That is impressive.
Yeah, well, I had access to some nice reference, you know, his own daughter.
Wow. Ladies and gentlemen, Michael Cordeloni, the drummer for the beloved rock band Lynyrd Skynyrd and Damn Yankees, makes his Asheville, North Carolina debut with an exhibit of his newest artwork. The exciting show takes place at the Philip DeAngelo Studio in Asheville's iconic River Arts District. And adding to the excitement is a reception with the artist on Saturday. So mark your calendar, Saturday, May 25th from 12 noon to 3 p.m. And the event is free and open to the public. Now the show, titled Bella Italia, will be a very unique experience featuring paintings by Michael as well as Philip, and built around an agreed upon topic for side-by-side paintings, which Michael shared with us today in celebration of one of the world's most beloved and revered locations, Italy. The show will also include a display of additional works by each artist, expanding the depth of the event. And the genesis for Bella Italia can be traced to when the two visual artists met and discovered that they have ancestral roots from the same area of Italy, specifically Sicily. As they exchanged stories, it became clear that an art show celebrating their beloved shared Italian heritage would be a wonderful way to capture the essence of those conversations. The synergy between their shared experiences and the vibrant culture of Italy became the inspiration for this very meaningful project. Michael, I've enjoyed our time together today, and I can't wait to see what you do next.
Thank you, Ward. I really appreciate you having me on here. I've enjoyed this too.
Well, thank you so much, Michael. And ladies and gentlemen, again, Asheville, North Carolina. This is May the 25th at the Philip DeAngelo Studio. So if you are in the area, mark your calendar again, May 25th. Stop by, enjoy the incredible display of art between these two gentlemen. And it'll be a day to remember, I can promise you that. And so again, ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank you for watching and listening. And hey, Michael, where can new fans of your art learn more about you?
I have a website where they can see all of my artwork, and it is michaelcartelloni.com.
Oh, and I have to ask, because I fell in love with the Four Davids. Do you offer any of your works, not just reproductions on canvas, but maybe in poster form? Can I say that?
There are some things out there, yeah.
All right. Well, I can't wait. And again, thank you so much. And for all of you watching and listening, as for me, I'll see you next time.